Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Robert Fenton, CEO at Qualio. Robert, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Matt. Thanks for having me today.
So, Robert, what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the show is give my guest a chance to provide a bit more of an introduction in terms of who they are, what they do. So, Robert, the floor is yours.
Oh, awesome. Thanks, Matt. So, my name is Rob Fenton. I'm the founder and CEO of Qualio. Before I get into my background, maybe I'll tell you a bit about Qualio itself. So we are a software company, a SaaS company, and we started Qualio to enable teams launch and scale life-saving products. It's the reason we get up every day. And we do that by solving what we believe is the biggest challenge holding this industry back today, which is this incredible fragmentation around quality. And we basically unite their quality teams or tools and their data so that they're actually able to get products to market quickly, pass FDA audits, and then scale successfully, knowing that the products they put out in the marketplace are safe, effective, and work consistently, which we think is important because it is a co-equal promise to the Hippocratic oath the doctor takes, but it's incredibly difficult to deliver in that consistently over time. And if you look back over the news during COVID, before COVID, and probably after COVID, it is an enormous challenge for the industry to solve today. And even a bigger challenge when you look at this incredible evolution that's happening. When back in the day in the 1990s, there was, you know, a lot of really big pharmaceutical medical device companies. But what we're seeing right now is a once in a generation transformation where there's an entirely new breed of companies being born. Not only do these companies look different, they're in areas like computational biology, software as a medical device, machine learning, AI platforms that do triaging for doctors and things like that. And these companies have just an entirely new set of needs. And we see ourselves as building the trusted toolkit or system for these needs. And maybe the simplest way to describe that is that unfortunately today, product business philosophy feels like an opposing force to actual product quality. To achieve one, you sacrifice the other, and it's this unhealthy balance. And we believe that in today's modern world, companies need both, and that's no longer a good enough excuse. And our job is to build a platform, build a collaboration toolkit that enables our customers to move as quickly as they possibly can while still being confident that everything they do is building something safe, effective, and that will work.
No, I think that's a great kind of setup for the overall discussion. You know, so when you're talking kind of the quality in that development cycle, can you maybe provide maybe more, you know, a slightly broader definition in terms of what you mean by quality and kind of what is, you know, what are the aspects that are subject to that quality management?
Sure. So the promise of quality is, as I discussed, it's making this promise that these products and services are safe, effective, and work consistently. The act of quality management in my view is what we call the set of activities that companies complete that together output, you know, the data and evidence that you can meet those promises. The challenge for companies is that in reality, that is, it touches nearly every part of the operating of a business. Everything from making sure that the people you hire have the right training to do the jobs you ask them to do, to make sure that you build consistent processes for building and developing your products and you document those and you actually document every time you miss those. Every time you make an error, you document that. Every time you get feedback from a customer or prospect, you document that. And this is just an example of the body of evidence that you build that gives you that confidence, that allows you to get audits. Particularly in areas like product development, you need to make sure that if you're making, here's a pen, you can't see this, but if a pen in my hand right now, if this pen was to measure, this is my real-time blood glucose monitoring, you would have a requirement about the shape and size of the pen. And you need to actually be able to go from that obvious user need all the way through the different steps to make sure that yes, the product meets that. And with products that have thousands to tens of thousands of requirements, that becomes an incredibly difficult challenge to keep all that data together make sure that you can actually understand what's going on. So it can be difficult to describe where it begins and ends. I look at it as this critical infrastructure that supports every company activity, and it gets embedded across every team.
Yeah, and kind of, as you said, from that description, it sounds like it really interweaves without really any end. Especially, kind of as you're suggesting, if you're talking about, like a pharmaceutical service or medical device product, you don't want to have, or you really hope to minimize that opportunity for any amount of safety concern to enter the picture.
Yes. And that therein lies the big challenge today, is that you're building a product today without Qualio. You are going to create a lying static document because it's our spreadsheet or a database you create because you have to. It's like Monopoly. You cannot pass go unless you can show you have a clearly described set of requirements that link to the product you build and link to the testing you've done. And what it leads to is, instead of being able to work in faster sprints and iterate and learn, you end up working on quarterly or longer release cycles. And most of the time, and we speak to product and engineering leaders who are almost in tears because they're building something really important for the world. This will make a real impact on the world, yet their development cycles, they spend all their time talking about the documents they need to update, not the user value that they create. And that's just one example in the medical devices space. You see the same thing in the pharmaceutical industry as well, where a lot of work goes into what we call building the artifacts of compliance rather than building the best business or building the best product, because ultimately, if you don't have the artifacts, you're dead. You cannot move forward. And we're trying to make sure that you're focused on building your business, and we will generate those artifacts, et cetera, as you need. It makes sense when you explain, like, clearly the detail is more difficult, but I think it's one of those inherent truths that once you look at the world that way, it becomes obvious that this is the way things need to be done.
Yeah, and I like the way that you just described that. If you want to build the best business that you can, as opposed to building the business around the compliance requirements, it's kind of similar to what I hear on the care delivery side of healthcare, where I normally live, where organizations fear all the operational regulations that layer in. But if you just kind of, building off of what you said, if you're creating a business that is well functioning, part of that well functioning is figuring out how to most effectively address your compliance requirements and meet those requirements in a way that probably enhances what you're doing from a business perspective.
At my call, the simple way is, you don't want to let the tail wag the dog. Right. And it might be, oversimplified, but that's the pain you see when you speak to people in these businesses that holds them back, which is painful. And I mean, how do we solve that? I mean, we've described what we believe are the 12 pillar activities of quality, the 12 activities that we're building a product to solve in a really easy to use way. And we're also integrating really deeply with all the data systems people use. We're launching an integration with like Salesforce. We're deeply integrated with product development systems. We'll pull in the data automatically, synthesize that, and connect it for you so that you don't need to worry about you being the person under the hood trying to make sure A goes to B and to C, and you can prove that. Our job is no. That's our job. That's what the software's job is. Your job is to go, is this the right requirement? A patient, there is an issue. Okay, let's just solve the issue. And Qualio will help connect all the pieces itself, and also connecting using Qualio, because we're the only product that actually deeply integrates across the entire supply chain. We can actually create this connectivity layer between the ecosystem itself, which is really powerful, because if you look at some examples of some of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies, they've told us, and we've spoken with them, that about 70% of all their quality data is actually not theirs. It's generated by third parties in this ecosystem, and they depend on these companies. I was like, well, what if we could natively automatically share that data as appropriate without having to have somebody in the middle just, picking up the data here and manually entering it there? So there's so many ways to move that needle.
Yeah, and part of what I think you were saying a minute ago, around all the, layering on top of the challenges of gathering the data from so many different sources, I think you were also mentioning the, that impacts sometimes the ability to move quickly. And, I believe you're talking about, because you're so worried about missing any of those gating issues, maybe you're moving from a quarterly cycle to an annual cycle, or you know, any type of length of time that starts decelerating. You know, given kind of what's happened around COVID and the extremely rapid pace with which, you know, the vaccines were developed, do you see that process maybe starting to change, or you know, kind of what lessons do you see that could be adapted and evolved, or you know, kind of evolved upon to really help keep things on a more accelerated time frame?
You know, I won't say the benefit of COVID, because that's just like inappropriate and not true. I think there's some what has come from COVID, which I believe is a useful lesson learned for the future, is that it doesn't need to take a decade necessarily. That was just the way it always was. And what's come from that is that for the first time, I believe, and we see this in our customers, we see this in the industry directly, is that speed matters in a way it didn't matter before. Just like in non-healthcare businesses, like speed to market, speed of scale, the ability to quickly adapt to your customers' needs. And in non-healthcare businesses has always been, that's obviously important, but healthcare was protected from that apparently because there was no way to move quickly. But now I think the, you know, people's eyes have been opened to, no, if you apply your resources correctly, you can solve for this. And now I think there's an expectation when people start businesses and people raise investor capital, when people from the market demand, people expect these things to move quickly. And that is both exciting for the industry, but again, it poses the question of, well, how can we do that? We know we need to, but how can we? Which it means that it was, in a way, really great timing that this is something we've been building towards.
It kind of, with that in mind, how do you see the industry being able to maintain that quicker pace? You know, because I suspect it's,
yeah,
you know, I think you've been implying it's, you know, like, I don't think the companies would necessarily want it to take so long. But there are, a lot of probably different moving pieces in the background that require bringing together and completing the puzzle. So, you know, kind of how do you see these lessons being actually implemented and not allowing a slide back to how things were?
Of course. Yeah, that's true. Just wanting a change to happen does not make a change happen. And I think I've stated now a couple of times, look, there's now an awakening around that desire. Yeah, we're seeing the regulatory agencies of the world adapt as well. So they're working really hard. I've been part of FDA related workshops around how can they support companies to move quicker, and what situations can a company move faster that's not actually deleterious to the quality of the product and actually helps create real benefit in the world. So particularly in areas like medical devices, this is a big priority because they don't want to be the gatekeepers. They don't want to gatekeep positive benefit from, you know, the populations that they cover. They want to gatekeep problems. And there's a lot of evolution happening there, which is exciting. And we're also seeing a market transformation. So one of the theses that I've had that driving a lot of how we think Qualio is that this once in a generation market evolution where we're seeing this change in this ecosystem to support higher velocity, which is less bigger, slower, vertically integrated healthcare Goliaths and more smaller, nimbler, faster moving companies that are highly networked. They're tightly networked, highly interdependent, and that allows them to collaborate quickly and really specialize. And now it's this vendor ecosystem. They joke, it's a bit like Hollywood where all these companies come together to make a movie and they're all really great at what to do. There's parts of this we're seeing now in the healthcare. And it's one of the powerful things we've noticed is you will have the IP owner, maybe the pharmaceutical company or the medical devices company. And they might work with a contract organization for design, development, for laboratory testing, for manufacturing, clinical trials, labeling, packaging, and distribution. All of that is outsourced to specialists, which allows a type of velocity that wasn't possible before. You know, which is incredibly exciting. And that's, so there's a lot of things. And of course, it's going to be no one thing, but all of these things coming together. Then you have software solutions like Qualio, which, you know, we believe we can be the quality infrastructure for this industry, this common layer, which facilitates automated, speedy collaboration and data sharing. Again, all these things together connect. And now you have an industry that doesn't look anything like it used to look, and for the better.
That's a really fascinating description of, you know, in breakdowns, you said, of seeing these smaller, more nimble organizations that are being tapped into by the bigger ones to aid development in the life, kind of the life sciences side. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Rob Fenton from Qualio, and we're talking about quality management and kind of development cycle. And, you know, turning back to, you know, what you were just saying about that nimbleness, you know, is it fair to say that it's kind of the larger companies, to the extent that they're still at the top of the food chain, are acting maybe more as conveners as opposed to trying to handle everything in-house?
I think it's hard to make a call on exactly how that's coming together. I do believe that they're a lot of the bigger companies, you know, we might look at, you know, the Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. I mean, BioNTech was like the vaccine developer, right? Pfizer, you could look at how that relationship developed. So I think these bigger companies are becoming capital arms, distribution arms, marketing arms. And there's a lot of partnerships with these ecosystem companies and acquisitions of these companies. That's how we see a lot of it. Clearly, that's not the only way. How we might think about it is, I think there's a very clear analog in the software world. And, you know, Andreessen Horowitz, a really famous venture capital firm, spoke over a decade ago about software is eating the world, right? Back before, you know, we're glued to our phones and everything was an app and everything was connected that way. Now their phrase is bio is not the next new thing. It's becoming everything, right? And I think that's really true. And you'll notice that whereas the late 2000s, like Dropbox and companies like that were incubated in like Y Combinator, like a famous startup accelerator. But Y Combinator will now tell you that like they're one of their biggest bets is in the future of bio. And they're now funding companies the very same way they've seeded these early companies in software. They're starting to do that now. A decade ago, you could not have for a couple hundred thousand dollars incubated a future public therapeutics company. So like these are the exciting things that are happening. So I think I just looked at the software world for analogs, and there's a lot of lessons learned there.
So kind of how is it that the, you know, as you said, you can now begin to see that the bio companies with the smaller amounts of money, because I agree, it's, you know, I think what you'd historically hear is you're going to be spending probably many millions of dollars to get to the point where previously maybe then a big pharma company would step in and take it over and kind of take it that last mile through maybe the last stage or two of clinical trial.
It's a lot of it comes down to the technology life cycles and how they're moving forward. We're seeing that new technologies being developed in healthcare. And we're also seeing technologies that were used outside of healthcare be brought in. So, you know, like mRNA technologies, we're seeing vaccine development happen at rates we've never seen before because it's a technology that can be repurposed to a degree. It's a technology platform that didn't exist before and that has novel applications. That's just a big one that's topical right now without going into the detail. But then we will look at artificial intelligence work being done where we have customers that will do, they will triage breast check scan data, the triage for doctors to improve the detection of problems, minimize the risk of missing things that are serious. A decade ago, that technology, that image scanning and recognition and analysis technology didn't exist. But now that it does, it can just be applied into healthcare. Computational biology, right? Finding new drugs can be done via computer now. Well, that's oversimplifying it, but in ways that wasn't possible before. So what we're seeing, I think, is this technology moving forward and is finding new applications in healthcare where before, you know, if you look at the time it takes and how people develop drugs, and I studied pharmacy and I was fascinated by drug development. When I studied it, it was what I thought I would do. And I worked in some R&D roles. You know, it's like going from being a blind person and, you know, you're in a cave trying to find your way out to now being able to just apply brute force, compute power, and also just apply design principles that just were not available before.
So with all those new technologies, do you think that they're fully understood, or that the full current capabilities are being utilized effectively or as comprehensively as possible?
I would say, you know, the easy answer is no, because if you look at any you know, every technology is in hype cycles and the way things work, right? I think we are at the beginning of this evolution right now. Last year, when, you know, we were looking at across the next decade, we made an internal bet that this decade is going to see a similar evolution, like what happened in the software world in 20 years is going to happen this decade here. And as we watch, like we recently looked at financings, even on sources like Crunchbase, you know, we had over 7,000 financings in this industry in 24 months. And that was only, I think, in bio, we didn't even cover the full thing, the full area. That's just one data point. And they're starting to happen everywhere now, everywhere you look. Every top tier VC venture capital fund who has basically, you know, created, financed the entire software category over the last 30 years are all hiring partners in healthcare, life sciences, and bio, and are all raising funds for this because there's a belief that that domino is about to fall. And now we're actually ready to start getting to ROI here. Like these technologies can be applied.
And kind of with all that investment starting to come in, and it sounds like coming in very quickly, do you think that the investors fully understand what they're investing in, or do you, any kind of related to that, if the investors aren't necessarily fully, you know, kind of understanding what is being developed, could aims from the investors impede refinement and progress with, you know, as the development cycle continues?
It depends. And just like any process, there is going to be a volume of different types of effort being made as the world discovers how the evolving success path looks like, just like in any innovation cycle, like in any technology or any wave since that we've gone through, you know, over the history of the human race. Yes, there's going to be some successes and failures. The thing that's interesting is that there's an emerging understanding of the technologies driving how these products can be built, and top firms are recruiting the smartest people in the world for this. So I think there's a broad understanding, as much as depending on the stage of any investment capital, clearly there's different amounts of risk, there's different amount of market risk, technology risk, execution risk taken. I don't think it's very different, to be honest, to what the skill sets have been developed. And of course, the regulatory bar is getting higher because over time, you know, regulation tends to go in one direction only, and the expectations and the bar goes up.
And actually kind of picking up on that regulatory piece, you know, I think you kind of mentioned earlier about the FDA as the prime example, you know, seeming trying to work with and enable this faster pace. So, you know, kind of, can you help level set more clearly, you know, how the FDA is fitting in and, you know, what the FDA is doing that you think is helping create a positive impact?
Yeah. What they're doing is they're looking at things like risk classifications and for certain product risks. What really is important? Like, what is the bar that should be there? One of the things you're doing, and what is a fast track application look like? Is it based on teams? Is it based on the technologies? Is it based on predicates that exist? How can the educate and support companies to give them what they need? So there's we don't think we have time even in this call to go through some of the things that these organizations are trying to do. And again, some will work, some won't work. And it's an area we clearly care a lot about because one of the promises we make to our customers, and which is really a promise to like us as people, as consumers of these products and services, is one of trust, right? And that is the balancing act. You want to maximize velocity because yes, it can save lives. You don't want to hold it back unless you need to. But if you need to, you need to. But if you don't need to, you got to be very careful because it does harm. Yeah, if you hold things back. What we're trying to do is keep on top of everything that's evolving and work with our customers to make sure that they trust that we have what they need to demonstrate that to regulatory agencies in the world, and that this data that they have it reflects the truth, such that if somebody's building their products and services with Qualio powering that they can trust and we can trust that it's going to be safe, it's going to be effective, and it will work.
And so it kind of sounds like, you know, the bottom line is no matter what you're doing, you need to have the data available and data that's accurate.
Exactly. And some of the areas that come, like there's a whole lot of innovations coming on around the types of data as well. So as you know, that one of the challenges people have to solve for is that, you know, if 15 years ago, a medical device being approved was, let's say, like a pacemaker, now it's an app on your smartphone. It's just, it's the medical device, maybe, because this thing might compute from my heart rate from my Apple Watch I'm wearing right now, which is a class, which is actually a medical device on my wrist, right? What does it mean to, because the hardware is made by Apple. So like if you get into all these conversations of what is it, it's almost not quite philosophical, but you have to start from first principles backwards again, which is really fascinating, I think, when you look at that change we're seeing.
Yeah. And it's, you know, kind of it seems like it's challenging everybody to adopt that different way of thinking about, you know, kind of the industry and the approach. And by forcing everyone to rethink it, it presents a lot of opportunity for being able to create change going forward.
Yes. It's an amazing time in the world where people are questioning old assumptions. Because healthcare is too expensive, right? And how much healthcare investment goes towards the right things, how much healthcare investment is wasted. We all know in the Western world, particularly here in the United States, healthcare is a challenge for people, generally speaking. So anything we can do to create a better model that works better for everybody, all stakeholders, is, you know, it's a really, really, really great thing.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a great message because believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Rob Fenton, for a great conversation today.
Thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate the call.
Yeah, no, and thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.